at the organ, I was weary and ill at ease.
After Albert by Perry Pontiac, with Miriam Margolyes, Peter Jeffrey, and Anne Beach. After Albert.
Victoria without Albert. It barely seems possible, my dear Mr. Disraeli.
Quite.
A splendid funeral procession, though. Plumed black horses, marching soldiers, troops of dignitaries. 500 pipers from the Royal Highlanders playing the dead march from Saul and other favourites.
Lady Muriel, as principal lady-in-waiting, perhaps you could tell me why I've been summoned today to the royal presence. And so early in the morning, it's just 11:30.
I'm afraid I don't know, Mr. Disraeli. An opportunity to express your condolences, perhaps, on behalf of the House of Commons, as one of its most eloquent and, if I may say so, most admired members.
Yes, that does seem likely. I've prepared a brief, though fulsome, eulogy. One of my best. It should strike the right chord, I think.
No doubt. Your recent speech in the Commons on the graduated income tax was often inexpressibly moving.
Yes, thank you. Have you any idea how much longer I'm to be kept waiting? I have an engagement in half an hour. Someone is to meet me here.
I'm afraid not, Mr. Disraeli. I'm so sorry.
Oh.
Her Majesty didn't say. In truth, as far as I know, Her Majesty hasn't said anything to anyone since the funeral of the Prince. She's been as cloistered as a nun here at Windsor, stifling her sad sighs, one imagines, or flinging herself on her royal bed and sobbing until dawn. So I really can't tell you. Ah, she wishes to see you now.
Excellent.
Through this doorway, down the long gallery, and knock at the door of the royal reception room.
Yes, thank you so much. May I express the grief of an empire, ma'am? I speak, ma'am, solemn exhalations of deep mourning.
Yes? Mr. Disraeli?
Your Majesty.
Do enter.
Thank you, ma'am.
Come, kneel here by my throne.
Thank you again, ma'am. First of all, may I express the grief of an empire, ma'am? I speak, ma'am, of sorrow, of solemn exhalations of deep mourning, of dirges and frowns and wailings of despair, the tears of a distracted people, eternal sighs for roses blasted at their prime, tributes in all the tongues of the earth, yea, from the rolling potato fields of County Mayo to the steaming rice paddies of Sumatra, from the glistening pine forests of the Highlands to the thorn-choked Australian outback, from the sprawling slums of Calcutta to the huts of poor fishermen that fringe the South China Sea. One cry and one cry alone goes up. Oh, Albert, 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 Albert.
Thank you so much, Mr. Disraeli. That was excellent.
Not at all, ma'am.
Very impressive. You may rise.
Thank you, ma'am.
I greatly value your kind words, Mr. Disraeli, as I do your concern and understanding and your wise counsel.
Ma'am.
My dear Mr. Disraeli, I feel I should do something for Albert, something in a commemorative vein.
Yes, ma'am?
I thought I might name a bridge after him, or a lake, perhaps build a memorial, and a museum, and a concert hall. And I've considered renaming India after him, too. What do you think? Alberta, I thought I'd call it.
I see. Alberta.
Though, I confess, that does seem somehow too suburban for a land of swamis and snake charmers and flying carpets.
Yes, ma'am, perhaps so. Might I suggest...
Oh, please.
Possibly Your Majesty could use the name instead for some bit or other of Canada.
Good, yes. The notion pleases. I should never have thought of Canada. Thank you so much, Mr. Disraeli.
My pleasure, ma'am.
You're married, aren't you, Mr. Disraeli?
Yes, ma'am.
Rather a beanpole of a woman, as I recall, and so much older than you. An elderly beanpole. All things considered, Mr. Disraeli, there's a great deal to be said for the cosy security of a short, stout body. Can she be quite healthy, I wonder?
Mrs. Disraeli? Yes, I think so, ma'am.
If she were to die, would you name parts of your property in remembrance of her, do you think? Not a bridge or a lake or a bit of Canada, of course, but, for example, your drawing room or dining hall.
I confess I haven't thought about it, ma'am. And though, of course, it's never too early to consider such things.
The Mrs. Disraeli dining hall has a rather commercial ring to it, perhaps.
Yes, perhaps so.
I'm so pleased she's in ruddy good health, your wife. Still, it seems unfair, in a way.
Unfair, ma'am?
That she's alive and Albert isn't. How does Shakespeare put it? Why should a dog, a horse, a rat have life and thou no breath at all?
Indeed, ma'am.
Would you miss her if she died? I must confess, I miss Albert terribly at times. He invented the corkscrew, you know.
Did he, ma?
I believe so. Mm. And the moustache cup. And the piston engine. He absolutely refused to patent them, though. Give some other poor devil a chance to make a bob or two, he would say, I don't need it. Only with a heavy German accent. I am rich enough, mein Liebchen. I have few, a huge family, the trust of a nation, the resources of an empire. And then he would rub his hands together and hum quite loudly, like this. Rather disconcerting at times, the humming and the rubbing, the rubbing and the humming. He invariably did it at moments of great excitement or unbearable tension. For example, when he was dying.
Did he, ma'am?
Yes. Did you attend his dying in state, as it were?
Yes, ma'am. Very moving.
Wasn't it? Deeply, deeply affecting. Though, of course, after a while, that sort of thing can begin to cloy, especially if one remains at the bedside for hours at a time, as I did towards the end. An all-day and all-night vigil, Mr. Disraeli. I had a little throne brought in, so it was quite cosy, and some tea and sandwiches.
Ah.
When the light was good, I did a few watercolours to pass the time.
Did you, Ma?
Yes. This one is my favourite. I call it The Passing of Albert. The dark, sunken eyes came out especially well, I think. And I even managed little beads of perspiration on the fevered brow.
So you did, ma'am. Very expert work.
Oh, thank you. When he finally expired, I wept buckets. He looked so helpless lying there. Albert had always been so masterful and manly, you know.
Indeed, ma'am.
You're not particularly manly, if I may say so, Mr. Disraeli. With your bright, elegant clothes and flamboyant gestures and that tiny, almost incidental beard, no moustache at all. And the kiss curl caressing your lofty forehead.
No, ma'am.
Albert died of typhoid fever, the doctor said. I can't think where he might have picked it up. And he was so young. Did you see the Crystal Palace? That was one of his, you know.
Yes, ma'am. Magnificent.
Albert's own idea. Indeed, he built it all himself. In a manner of speaking. I remember him striding up and down the long gallery here talking about it. We shall build it in the High Park, mein Liebchen, and it will be wunderbar. And then he rubbed his hands and hummed again and again and again.
You must cherish all these memories, ma'am.
Oh, yes, yes.
But somehow, you must also try to look beyond them, ma'am, into the future. You, too, are young. A young woman with a world and a great place in the world before you.
I am also a lonely woman, Mr. Disraeli.
Surely not, ma'am. Your children...
The children are company, of course. Little Victoria and Edward and Alice and Alfred and Helena and Louise and Arthur and Leopold and... Beatrice? But I'm afraid I'm not stimulated by their presence, Mr. Disraeli. Not made zestful or vivacious.
I'm becoming frumpish and grumpy and frustrated.
No, ma.
My life is drab, and it's making me drab, too. I'm no longer able to serve my people properly, Mr. Disraeli, to rouse all my talents and virtues on their behalf. As a queen and as a woman, I feel I now lack something vital.
Do you, ma'am?
Yes. Perhaps with your large fund of sympathy, you can guess what that is, Mr. Disraeli.
I'm afraid I'm at a loss, ma'am.
I have been musing in the long, dark hours since Albert's passing, and I have made a decision. Mr. Disraeli, I owe it to the nation and to the Empire, and not least to myself, to marry again.
To you, ma'am?
Yes. As dear Mr. Tennyson put it, I must be loyal to the royal in myself. And I should greatly value your counsel in this matter.
I'd be honored, ma'am.
Now, I've considered many of the crowned heads of Europe, but none of them will do. Indeed, most of them are my nephews. The remainder are, for the most part, terribly prim and stuffy. Very much like dear Albert.
I see.
Albert hated to be touched, Mr. Disraeli, or worse, to touch. In all candor, the Prince Consort and I indulged in connubial intimacies on only 9 separate occasions. Edward, Alice, Alfred, Helena, Louise, Arthur, Leopold, Beatrice, and little Victoria. After the succession was amply guaranteed, Albert's interest turned to other things. The moustache cap, the piston engine, the great exhibition, innovations in movable type, the introduction of the Christmas tree. The list is endless.
So it is, ma'am.
I am naturally a warm, romantic, passionate woman, Mr. Disraeli. And I should very much like my future husband to prove rather more fleshly, in Mr. Swinburne's unfortunate term, than dear Albert ever was.
I see, ma'am.
So, have you any suggestions? Any at all?
Well, ma'am, have you considered Prince Otto Moravia? Recently widowed, a skillful horseman, a man of great piety.
Anyone else?
Count Krumholtz of the Volta?
No, I think not.
Biedekin, Prince of the Bolsings. Blonde, fresh-faced, amiable. He's rather young, I'm afraid. Only 7, in fact. Though tall for his age, they say. If you'd be willing to wait...
Is there no one more mature? Perhaps somebody local?
Your Majesty, I shall do some research and bring you the findings as soon as...
Never mind, Mr. Disraeli. I think I have found the very man we seek, our future Prince Consort. And I would sound you out on the matter.
Of course, ma'am.
He is an Englishman, a public figure, a great patriot. And, Mr. Disraeli, he has succeeded in winning my heart.
Indeed.
Oh, it's just like the words of dear Mr. Sullivan's song, The Lost Chord. Do you know it? Albert used to sing it very often in his fine baritone. Seated one day at the organ, I was weary and ill at ease, and my fingers wandered idly over the noisy keys. I know not what I was playing or what I was dreaming then, but I struck one chord of music like the sound of a great amen. Mr. Disraeli, you have struck just such a chord in me. You have found my lost chord. You have sounded my great amen.
I?
Yes.
Oh, I'm most deeply honored, of course, ma'am.
How do I love thee, Mr. Disraeli? As dear Mrs. Browning recently put it, let me count the ways. I love you purely for your charm and tact, your gallantry, your warmth and tender concern. I love you madly for your grace and elegant dress, your negligent airs, your little kiss, girl. Oh, irresistible. Have you any views on the subject?
Well, ma'am, only that I am, as you know, already married.
But you have no children, Mr. Disraeli, not a single one. An odd, even unique statistic in this England of 1861. Oh, Clearly, your marriage is unconsummated. No great surprise, considering your poor wife's lack of obvious attractions. I assure you that an alliance such as yours, fruitless, arid, untried, could easily be dissolved. Indeed, I would grant a royal assent to your annulment with the greatest of pleasure.
I see, ma'am. Thank you.
Oh, my dear Mr. Disraeli, any other so-called problems?
I am, alas, a mere commoner, ma'am.
I see your point, of course. It's very true. Therefore, I have decided to ennoble you, my dear Mr. Disraeli, to raise you to some lofty title. There is a sword of state quite handy to the throne for just such a purpose. Any other difficulties?
Only one, ma'am. I am, I'm afraid, ma'am, a Jew.
Are you? Yes, I suppose Disraeli is a Jewish name. And Benjamin. Mm. And your middle name, something like Goldstein or Rothberg or Finkelblatt, I imagine.
Very like it, ma'am.
I see. I see. A considerable obstacle, to be sure. But hardly insurmountable, I think. Not in the eyes of true love. No, I shall marry you all the same.
Forgive me, ma'am, but you are a very prominent Christian. As such, you can't marry a Jew. Can you?
As such, no. Surely you're familiar with your own Old Testament, Mr. Disraeli. Book of Ruth, chapter 1, verse 16. Whither thou goest, I will go. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God, my God. I shall become Jewish myself.
But you are the head of the Church of England, ma'am.
Then I shall become the head of the synagogue of England. I shall simply convert. And my people will convert with me. Many years ago, my great predecessor, Henry VIII, changed religions, and the nation happily adjusted its faith to his preference. Yes. We shall be married in St. Paul's Synagogue sometime next year. On Yom Kippur, perhaps. By the Arch-Rabbi of Canterbury. We must invite the Rothschilds.
I see.
And how I look forward to... But perhaps as a woman, I should not speak of such things.
Oh, but you must, ma'am, please.
Very well. I yearn, Mr. Disraeli, though I blush to confess it, for the marriage bed's happy toil, half labour and half languor.
Yes, ma'am.
A blessed union. And consider the fruit thereof.
The fruit?
Our offspring. Not like the dull, dutiful issue of Albert's loins. Edward, Louise, Leopold, little Victoria and the others. But vital, fanciful children. Bright sparks, as from two lusty branches rubbed briskly together in a forest clearing. Flaming, unquenchable spirits. Like myself and you. Little Isidore. And Jaime, and Moishe, and Golda, and Lear, and the rest.
Yes, but not until next year, you say, ma'am. The wedding isn't to be until then, so we shall have ample time to consider the matter.
Yes, next year. Oh, you sound impatient, my dear friend.
No, no, not at all, ma'am.
I thought you might be. And indeed, Mr. Disraeli, why should we wait?
Why wait?
To consummate our feelings. Oh, and indeed, a passion such as ours brooks no delay.
Yes,
and besides, Mr. Disraeli, as it happens, all is in readiness even now.
Is it?
Yes. I have perfumed the royal bedchamber. The floor is carpeted with rose petals, a tide of rose petals lapping at the very fringes of the bedclothes. The canopy is festooned with swags of blossom, larkspur, peony... Passion flower.
Indeed. I see.
So come with me now, my curled darling, my swarthy nomad. Wander whither you will, my wild-spirited one.
Your Majesty, such an invitation is, of course, a rare privilege indeed. I will most happily accompany you now into the royal bedchamber, and indeed into the royal bed. But as to my active participation once within the royal bedclothes, I fear I cannot, ma'am.
You cannot?
Alas, ma'am, no.
But what is the the difficulty, Mr. Disraeli. I confess I cannot see it.
Oh, ma'am. To be precise, ma'am, I am, as it were, incapable of woman.
Mr. Disraeli, surely not.
I fear so. Do allow me to explain, ma'am. I have long been, as your Majesty has often graciously pointed out, a devoted servant of the crown. Indeed, it seems that I have so channeled the full force of my energies, all my passion and vigor and enthusiasm into my loyal service to you, to the defense and support of your Majesty and your Majesty's realm and scattered dominions, that I find I have no inclination, no impulse, no power left for the intimate gratification of the flesh, nor indeed for the generation of species.
Oh, Mr. Disraeli.
Alas, my only offspring, I fear, ma'am, will be my deeds on your behalf. My only lust, my loyalty.
But surely you could moderate your patriotism, Mr. Disraeli. A trifle less zeal, perhaps?
I fear not, ma'am. There is no woman living or dead who could entice me in that way. Not even your Majesty.
Oh, Mr. Disraeli.
We could, of course, go now and lie in your bed together, ma'am, and engage, perhaps, in a lively discussion on some subject of interest. The Corn Law, or the intricacies of a possible reform bill. Indeed, we could have many such chats down through the years.
I see. Yet, Mr. Disraeli, if I were now to command you to the act, a sort of royal edict, stern and binding and unequivocal, then surely, out of simple loyalty, as your sworn patriotic duty to crown and country, you would obey, rather than defy your sovereign like a...
Like a common traitor, ma'am.
Oh, no, Mr. Disraeli.
And if I be such, ma'am, then grant me the traitor's fate.
Where are you going, Mr. Disraeli?
To take down the great and ancient sword of state, ma'am, that ever hangs in its jeweled scabbard near the throne. I unsheath it thus, and place it, ma'am, here in your hands. Now, grasp the great sword by its handle, ma'am, and lift it until the quivering point of its long, time-tempered blade dallies with my bosom. And then, ma'am, thrust it through my vitals again and again, as often as you wish, and I shall die, ma'am. Die without a murmur of complaint, nay... Die with a patriotic song on my lips, a rousing ballad that celebrates your Majesty's greatness, or the Royal Navy, or our beautiful countryside, or the eternal glory of the British Empire. There, the moment has come. So now, ma'am, thrust, thrust, thrust it through. When Britain first at heaven's command. Now, ma'am, now.
No, no, Mr. Disraeli. You may live. You may live to serve me in other ways. Oh, what shall I do now? I had so many plans. Our engagement party, our wedding, our honeymoon, all our fine children. Jaime, Moishe, Leah. Little Isidore with the dark, dark eyes.
Oh, ma.
More than ever, Mr. Disraeli, I require your indispensable counsel. What future is left for me? What shall I do in the days and decades aching ahead of me?
With all humility, ma'am, I suggest that first you acquire a vast wardrobe of black mourning garments to wear exclusively in the future in honor of Albert, your lost love.
My lost love. Yes. Anything else?
Assume an equally gloomy manner, ma'am. One of never-ebbing grief at the prince's untimely passing. I am a politician, ma'am, and I promise you it will suit the age.
I see.
Hide yourself away here at Windsor, doing nothing remarkable, saying nothing original, emerging fully to the public view after 20 or 30 years. In time, your golden jubilee, perhaps. Your people will love you, ma'am. Crowds will hail your glory. You will be worshipped as never before throughout your vast and growing empire. You will become a beacon to the world, ma'am.
Thank you so much. I shall heed your counsel as ever. And what will you do now, Mr. Disraeli?
I shall merely continue to devote my energies to my country, striving to become your Prime Minister one day, so I may serve you most potently, ma'am.
Of course. And now you must leave me, Mr. Disraeli.
Yes, ma'am.
As for me, I think I shall go now to one of my minor bedchambers and fling myself upon the bed and sob until dawn.
I see, ma'am.
You may go, Mr. Disraeli. As you walk backwards out of the room bowing, take care not to collide with the bust of Queen Anne near the doorway. So many people have over the years.
I'm grateful, ma'am. Goodbye, ma'am.
Goodbye, Mr. Disraeli.
Lady Muriel.
Mr. Disraeli, how is Her Majesty?
Desperate with grief, I'm afraid.
Oh.
Were there any messages for me while I was in there?
Messages, Mr. Disraeli? Oh, yes, one. A young lady came by, and after a while she said to tell you that she couldn't wait any longer.
Oh.
But that she will meet you in her dressing room at the Drury Lane Theatre between the matinee and evening performances. Around 5:30.
5:30. Good.
Is there anything she wants?
Who?
Her Majesty.
Oh, Her Majesty, of course. Indeed there is, Lady Muriel. She requires a vast selection of widow's weeds. Enough to see her through the century, I should think. A new moral age is upon us, Lady Muriel.
Is it? I'll take some notes, if I may.
I suggest you draw up a list of bridges and lakes and bits of Canada suitable for Her Majesty to name after Albert.
Thank you so much, Mr. Disraeli.
Not at all.
She is weeping, you say?
Sobbing in wild dismay, Lady Muriel, quite mad with grief. Indeed, when I took my leave, she said something about weeping until dawn.
Oh.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mr. Disraeli. Poor Majesty. Poor Majesty. Now, lakes, bridges, and bits of Canada.
Oh, Mr. Disraeli. Dear Mr. Disraeli.
I know not what I was craving or what I was dreaming then.
In After Albert by Perry Pontac, Queen Victoria was played by Miriam Margolyes, Disraeli by Peter Jeffrey, and Lady Muriel by Anne Beach. The director was Marion Nankana.